It was as if someone had taken tons of coloured sands and thrown them across the floor in a great swirl of coloured chaos. But there was order fighting for survival in the chaos, rising and falling and spreading. Millions of randomly tumbling sand grains would nevertheless make a piece of pattern, which would replicate and spread across the circle, rebounding or merging with other patterns, and eventually dissolving into the general disorder. It happened again and again, turning the mandala into a silent, raging war of colour. Lutze stepped out onto a frail-looking wood and rope bridge.
"Well," he said, "what do you think?"
Lobsang took a deep breath. He felt that if he fell off the bridge, he'd drop into the surging colours and never, ever hit the floor. He blinked and rubbed his forehead. "It's evil," he said.
"Really?" said Lutze. "Not many people say that the first time. They use words like wonderful."
"It's going wrong."
"What?"
Lobsang clutched the rope railing.
"The patterns," he began. "History repeating," said Lutze. "They're always there."
"No, they're..." Lobsang tried to take it all in. "There were patterns under the pattern, disguised as part of the chaos. I mean, the other patterns." He slumped forward. The air was cold, the world was spinning, and the ground rushed up to enfold him and stopped a few inches away. The air around him sizzled, as though it was being gently fried.
"On your gate, lad."
"Lutze," he said, "the mandala is..." But where were the colours? Why was the air wet and smelling of the city? And then the ghost memories faded away. As they disappeared, they said, "How can we be memories when we have yet to happen? Surely what you remember is climbing all the way up onto the roof of the Baker's Guild and finding that someone had loosened all the capping stones, because that just happened." The last dying memory said, "Hey, that was months ago."
"No, we're not Lutze, mysterious falling kid," said the voice that had addressed him. "Can you turn round?"
Newgate managed with great difficulty to move his head. It felt as though he was stuck in tar. A heavy young man in a grubby yellow robe was sitting on an upturned box a few feet away. He looked a bit like a monk, except for his hair, because his hair looked a bit like an entirely separate organism. To say that it was black and bound up in a ponytail is to miss the opportunity of using the term elephantine. It was hair with personality.
"Mostly, my name's Soto," said the man underneath. "Marco Soto. I won't bother memorising yours until we know if you're going to live or not, eh? So, tell me, have you ever considered the rewards of the spiritual life?"
"Right now, certainly," said... "Yes, Newgate," he thought. "That's my name, yes. So why do I remember Lobsang?"
"I was thinking about the possibility of taking up a new line of work."
"Good career move," said Soto.
"Is this some kind of magic?" Newgate tried to move, but hung, turning gently in the air just above the waiting ground.
"Not exactly. You seem to have shaped time."
"Me? How did I do that?"
"You don't know?"
"No."
"Ha! Well, you listen to him,"
said Soto, as if talking to a genial companion.
"There's probably the spin time of a whole procrastinator being used up to prevent your little trick causing untold harm to the entire world, and you don't know how you did it?"
"No."
"Then we'll train you. It's a good life and offers excellent prospects. At least," he added, sniffing, "better than those that confront you now."
Newgate strained to turn his head further.
"Train me in what exactly?"
The man sighed.
"Still asking questions, kid. Are you coming or not?"
"How?"
"Look, I'm offering you the opportunity of a lifetime. Do you understand?"
"Why is it the opportunity of a lifetime, Mr. Soto?"
"No, you misunderstand me. You, that is Newgate Ludd, are being offered, that is by me, the opportunity of having a lifetime, which is more than you will have shortly."
Newgate hesitated.